Welcome back. We're talking to Grover Norquist, president of Americans for Tax Reform. Now, when you look at the lessons from Detroit, it is a matter of tax competition, I think. The for a $50,000 home, David Ferdoso of Conservative Intelligence Briefing did this, a $50,000 home in Detroit, which isn't all that common, but just an example, would have over $3,300 in property taxes on it because they kept raising the taxes. So people left the city on top of the riots in 67. You know, they had the white flight then they had the black middle class flight because the government became so oppressive. We're seeing that in states like California, not only just people, but businesses moving to Texas. What kind of an example should this be to states like Maryland, where our governor is, you never met a tax he didn't like. He loves raising taxes so much that he set up a system where he gets to raise the gas tax for years after he leaves office. I mean, sooner or later, what's the breaking point, and how can we impress upon people that people do vote with their feet?
Well, over the last 10 years, millions of Americans have moved from one state to another. They move from high tax states. They move from high income tax states to states with no income tax or low taxes. They move from states with lots of spending to states with less spending. The idea that the American people want large government is something you can test. Do people move in or out of California? Do they move in or out of New York and Massachusetts? Or do they move towards states like Texas and Florida, which the liberals attack because they don't have enough big government programs and they don't even have an income tax in Florida. Big state, Florida. Big state, Texas. Tennessee, significant size state, no income tax. Why can some states operate without an income tax and attract young people and workers and investment and jobs? And other states, with all this lovely government money, they end up chasing businesses and workers and families and young people away. What they've been doing in Detroit has been chasing people away with punitive taxes that make it so expensive. People actually walk away from houses. All those pictures you've seen of Detroit with a rundown house, they weren't run down when the guy walked out the front door and left the key. They were such a tax liability. People said, I can't do this anymore. The government forced them out of their homes.
Now, Grover, one of the things about Detroit's current situation is it presents an enormous opportunity to restart, to see, you know, to basically revitalize the city, see if you can repopulate it, bring value back to it, bring businesses back to it. If Grover Norquist were granted a magic wand and appointed czar of Detroit, what would you do? What should Governor Schneider do? What should Kenneth Orr do to sort of revitalize the city?
Well, they should dramatically reduce the number of government employees. They should say to people who are paid a lot of money in pensions, we don't have money to keep paying pensions like that. You're going to get a fraction of what you were promised, more than the city can afford, but not as much as you were promised. And at some point, you know, if it's against the law to receive stolen goods. If somebody sells you a Rolex for $20, you're supposed to know it was stolen. At some point, people receiving gold-plated government pensions from a bankrupt city are in the equivalent situation. You know that there is no legitimate way somebody got their hands on your paycheck to give it to you because there is no such money. So as disappointing and sad as it is, and yes, they were lied to by the politicians, but they might have noticed over time that they were getting paid by a city and a tax base that didn't exist.
But when you hit the reset button, how do you start over in Detroit? Do you make it the entire city an enterprise zone? Is there...
You dramatically reduce taxes so that people will stay. You take all that land that's been abandoned and sell it off, give it away, and make sure that there's a commitment that they know that you're not just going to start this thing again. And part of it is you need to see some people say, we made a mistake. If the mayor doesn't give a press conference and say, we, the politicians, ran the city into the ground. Here's how we did it, and here's how we're not going to do it. even after they liquidate it, don't move to Detroit. If they cannot articulate the mistakes they made, they will make them again.
Well, that's the thing about Detroit and most major cities, no matter how corrupt the machine is, they have a history, the populace does, of reelecting. Coleman Young was reelected, was there for 20 years while he was under investigation for selling Krugerrands during apartheid. He was reelected. His chief of police was sent to prison for 10 years for embezzling $1.5 million from the police department. I mean, corruption. Kwame Kilpatrick is sitting in prison right now, the former mayor. How do you change that mentality of the voters? Because they're just, if you don't change the politicians and the politicians don't change, yeah, Nothing's going to change.
Well, one thing is the state should not bail them out. The state should not send them money. The federal government should not send them money. As long as people believe there's free money, then they don't mind corrupt politicians stealing part of what's free money. When they realize that the only money Detroit has, and they don't mind outrageous pensions paid to somebody who lives in their neighborhood, if they think that the federal taxpayer is paying for it or the state taxpayer is paying for it. But if they come to understand and realize that nobody except the people of Detroit are paying for the police, nobody except the taxpayers of Detroit are paying for the pensions of the firemen, then and only then do they take an interest in how this money is spent. I mean, at some point, when you're in a city, you are collectively responsible for your politicians. You voted for them.
That's true. One last question, Grover. I just want to pivot quickly to the president. This week, he's going to give three big economic speeches. He's, again, for the 10th time, shifting the focus back on the failing economy. But even the Washington Post, which wrote a generally glowing piece about the president's economic plans, in air quotes, acknowledges in paragraph 12, White House officials said the three speeches will not offer new proposals or approaches, anything at all. There's nothing new under the sun. Is anything going to happen if the president stays detached and in campaign mode rather than sitting down with Republicans and Democrats in Congress and trying to hammer out deals?
Yeah, Barack Obama is a very good candidate. He hasn't been a very good president. And so he likes to move away from the thing he's not very good at to the thing that he is good at. So he doesn't like governing. He doesn't like sitting down and talking to Republicans in the House and Senate to work on a budget. Even when that has to be done, he sends his vice president. He doesn't go. When he does go, he's insulting and grumpy when anyone suggests that everything isn't perfect. He was a very good candidate in 2008. He was a very good candidate in 2012. And so he wants to go back to being to giving speeches about hope and change, which sort of works if you're running against an incumbent and you're running as the challenger, but it's a little hard to run against the idiots running the government when they're you and your friends and people you appointed.
Grover Norquist, the man who wants to shrink government down to the size where he can drown it in the bathtub, but he doesn't necessarily want to drown it in the bathtub. He just wants it that small. President of Americans for Tax Reform. Grover, I appreciate your time today.
Derek, thank you.
Have a good one.
You too.
Right now, it's not so hot out, but are the roads messed up?